Welcome back to the Financial Markets Insights in Conversation with podcast. And today we're continuing our conversation with Andrew Kaufman, the founder and lead of the Time to Give Network. Thank you and welcome back, Andrew.
I mean, yes, originally very much because of your background and connections, it was very much focused on the asset management industry. And presumably since your focus initially was the UK and the UK's asset management industry, what are your plans? I mean, evidently there's no limits to how far this can spread.
Absolutely. I mean, the model is universal. We did focus on the UK asset management vertical initially. Number one, because I'm here in the UK. I've been here for 15 years, as you could tell by my subtle accent. I'm from the States. But this community interest company model only exists here. And this community interest company model is a very big part of what we think makes us special. But yes, I've spent most of my career selling into the asset management vertical. That's where my connections were. It did take a bit of convincing for, you know, everybody, nobody necessarily wants to be first, but thankfully the story sells enough that, you know, some of my senior connections bought into this, and it's all about dominoes falling at the end of the day. Though we have the CEO of a charity on the platform, we have a senior insurance executive. We recently forged a partnership with the Wasps legends from rugby. Again, going back to maybe celebrities where, you know, there are no shortage of rugby players who have supporters who would love to meet with them, whether that's a Zoom call, whether that's in person. And this offers, again, this offers them a means of giving back and raising money for either their foundation or charity that they care about. So this work, you know, I always say this works just as well in the UK asset management vertical as it does in Swiss pharmaceuticals, as it does in American oil and gas. And it's not necessarily just about meetings, but it could be about anybody offering services in return for donations. As long as people are willing to participate and are willing to be remunerated in the form of a charitable donation to their charity of choice, this universal model, you know, the potential is endless.
I particularly like that, Tilly, what you've just said, because I mean, many charities over the years have suffered from bad press because they say that, you know, 90% of money's raised basically pay the overheads and for expensive people to be hired. And equally, you don't want, going back through, if you have a celebrity or someone particularly well-known, you don't want anybody just being able to connect to them for any inappropriate reason. So you've got that level of vetting and confidence that you have to pay a subscription to get through the gates. And then after that, there is another layer of vetting before you'll actually be put in touch with anybody, which does rather get rid of people who are chancers and opportunists.
Yeah. So I've learned a lot over the years. There was an auction that I participated in, just as a quick aside. So Ray Dalio, a legend in the hedge fund world, there was an auction run by a charity that he supports in the U.S. That charity had to organize this. The charity had to do the PR. The charity had to hire a third party to run the auction for them, use the software. And I participated in that auction. And again, there was no barrier to entry. If I was the high bidder, I could have won. I personally bid $27,000. He ended up going for $80,000 for a lunch. But what I found interesting was, number one, there were only 13 unique bidders, which I think is a crime for a guy like Ray Dalio because he's a legend, but nobody knew about it, right? It's just, there's no place to go to for that sort of a thing, right? So there were only 13 bidders. He raised 80,000, which is great, right? But the problem is that the charity maybe got half of that. After all the cycles that they burned and the money that they spent, maybe they got $40,000 out of that. In the Time to Give Network model, Ray Dalio, if you're listening, Ray, please join the platform. Ray Dalio would join the platform, whatever price he went for, whether it was an auction or a buy it now, whatever that price was, that charity just gets that full amount without having to do anything, right? So we really, really want to help the charities. We want to be an agent for the charities to raise much needed funds, especially now in this age of austerity, I guess, for many people, it's that much harder and wallets are going to start closing and they just need a new way to do it. And this is an untapped channel for them.
No, I would say absolutely. In my own experience, I was laughing. I'm not quite in the lunch with Ray Dalio league, but I do have a games room downstairs, or my partner does, that's full of nonsense that I've paid ridiculous sums of money for at charity balls, you know, the highest value they've ever had. But what was interesting, and I was involved in organising these, is it's a big business. So the auctioneers get paid, you know, if you want to source these things, everybody's taking their turn. it does make you slightly cynical. Equally and oppositely, I've worked with charities like the Variety Club of Great Britain, who've really, really suffered. I mean, they've cut their resources, their physical overhead down to the quick, basically, because they want to expend the monies they got in a sensible way. They want it to go to the benefit of the recipients. They don't want it to be eaten up in posh buildings and huge numbers of salespeople. So I think for them, and a lot of charities, this is something that gives them the perfect opportunity that, again, everybody wins.
Yeah. And it also offers time givers the opportunity to promote the charities that they support, right? A big part of our marketing efforts going forward is that, just like this, I'll be doing interviews, but in this case, I'll be doing interviews of our time givers in their own words. Why did you join Time to Give Network? But most importantly, what charity have you chosen and why did you choose that charity? Because they don't have the opportunity to raise the profile of a charity. Some charities are quite small and have no way of raising awareness. So if some of their supporters are happy to do it and they're happy to raise that awareness, it also humanizes people a bit too, right? And then also, as these people are talking about it, for us, it just reduces that barrier to entry, because as you see a number of people that are already signed up in our 200 plus people that are signed up, if you start seeing people that you know and trust and are serious people, and they've made the decision to do this and announce themselves, the barrier to entry goes down just a little bit more and a little bit more. And then you're like, well, you know, I have a charity that I'd like to support. And I know that there's no shortage of people who are knocking at my door. So maybe I can find an hour a month or an hour a week or an hour a quarter, whatever it is, just to try to do that. So we're really excited about that, you know, because we haven't really stuck our head above the parapet as much as we will, but that is imminent. And these types of interviews are invaluable for us to, you know, kick things off in that regard.
Oh, I'm really happy that you say that. I'm smiling. You can't see me smiling, but you've made an analogy before that, you know, nobody wants to go first, which was true of any big banking initiatives or any great big projects over the years. But actually, in this case, it's, while that may be true, because it's a people thing, once they see other people there, everybody wants to be part of that club, right? Oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this thing. What are you doing? Oh, I'm a time giver on the Time to Give Network. Oh, what does that mean? It becomes self-fulfilling. And equally, your bidders are in the same boat. If somebody says, how on earth did you get to meet X? Right. Or how on earth did you get an hour in front of Y? They can say, oh, it's through this really funky initiative. So you've actually building your own sales force out of your member participant.
We have. We've had, thankfully, some time bidders refer other time bidders to us because they've gotten enough value. Right. You know, I have examples where for £150, they had a meeting with a senior executive at an asset management firm that then led to a half-day workshop. Right. Or we have one firm, a company called BML, who was a time bidder and then upped their status to sponsor, which is the other way we raise money in order to fund ourselves. Again, because we can't take investments. But he had a meeting. They were looking to move down to or open an office in Abu Dhabi. And he wanted to talk to somebody about the Abu Dhabi market and have a friend down there. And for £150, he now got all sorts of answers. He has someone that they'll never forget him and he'll never forget them just because of the nature of how they met. And the odds of that relationship flourishing are that much higher for £150, which is just crazy. So maybe prices will start going up.
I was just going to say, she'll be £500 next time.
So get in early. Sign up now. Get in early.
Exactly how markets move, right?
Exactly.
Supply and demand. And that really is interesting. So actually, on that one, if it's someone, provided that the ultimate entities are in the UK, then that charity piece still works.
So in that case, in the case of the executive from Abu Dhabi, right now we need to pick UK-based charities. Although we are growing into the US, I know you're going to ask me later, but we're growing into the US and that's going to be huge for us, I believe. Any of those UK charities is what was available to him. He ended up picking a Sri Lankan animal charity that's based here in the UK. And the reason why he did it is because his wife is Sri Lankan and he wanted to get on her good side. And this was his way of like doing something nice for her, raising a little bit of money for a charity that she cared about. So there's no shortage of potential drivers or scenarios in which people would say, maybe I'll do this. Where I'm hoping is that everybody will almost say that, because like, why wouldn't you? Why can't you take 5 minutes and put yourself up on the Time to Give Network and offer time? If nobody cares right now, fine.
Yeah, but there's no cost, is there? It doesn't matter from that perspective, whether you're approached or not approached in the short term, because as a giver, it's cost you nothing.
Correct. It costs you nothing. And if you're serious about it and you want to drive traffic, individuals that you know want to meet with you, if you drive them to Time to Give Network and say, this is how it's going to work, giving them their chance, then again, they can be a little bit more proactive, or they can just sign up and hope that the community grows. And we appreciate any participation, right? We have an unlimited bandwidth for participants.
I was going to say, it is unlimited. It's not even like, I mean, there's some industry associations and so on that sort of franchise themselves. But in this case, you have a universal platform, right? Yeah. It doesn't actually matter fundamentally in the fullness of time where the givers and the bidders are situated.
Right.
Subject to obviously things like learning where you can make the charitable donation. But in terms of that, do you have any, I mean, you've mentioned Abu Dhabi in the Middle East is obviously of a huge interest, I would think, to the asset management, wealth management communities at the moment. Is that a particular target market for you, or is the US your 2025 goal?
Yes. The Abu Dhabi is a bit of a one-off. So we have Abu Dhabi, we have someone from Luxembourg, we have someone from Sweden. So again, you know, as long as they can pick a UK-based charity at this time, then, you know, we're more than happy to have them on board. And all of the international charities also have a presence here. So you'll always be able to find a charity that'll resonate with you. But yeah, the plan for 2025, our growth for 2025, not only is going to be here in the UK, but also in the US. So we're now working with Just Giving, rather than just having the 26 odd thousand charities that are part of the platform there. They have over 1.5 million charities on their platform over there. So once that's done, then anybody in the US can pick any one of those 1.5 odd million charities. And that's where we really think this thing is going to hockey stick, not only because the market's bigger, but because as an American, I guess maybe I know they're a little bit more comfortable with putting it out there and saying that they're raising money for charity and a bit more Wild Westy, I guess.
I think you're entirely right. I hadn't thought about it before, but I think culturally, you're exactly right. I think the US typically and US corporates typically have a much bigger propensity than the UK to be out loud about what they do, and both in terms of their individual roles, but also in terms of supporting charities and making a lot more noise around it. So that is kind of interesting.
I mean, we'll still run everything through the community interest company here to make sure that the structure is nice and tight and that, you know, nobody can take advantage and, you know, that we show that we're just trying to do good here as opposed to a proper commercial enterprise. But yeah, after the US, we can just continue to grow and grow. But knowing what I know and talking to the people that I've spoken with there, we really expect this to take off. But we really, our messaging now, today, is that the UK financial services industry and its ecosystem are coming together to create this critical mass to then release this to the world and take credit for doing that as well, right? It started here. This thing, which could be global and take any number of permutations, all started here and all started with this community. And I think that that community spirit is something that resonates with people when they're thinking about participating.
I'm loving this. So actually, if you get the States, then anybody in the States who has an interest to come to the UK has access to those givers, potentially, and vice versa. It's the gift that keeps on giving. There's no end to it from a scale perspective, is there?
The first meeting we had was actually a bit of a one-off, but to your point. So it was the Chief Information Officer of Prescient Fund Services, a fund administrator based in South Africa, but with a big Irish presence as well. And he used to be a client of mine, and he was coming up to London. And I said, hey, Garth, can you take a 1-hour meeting while you're here? I'm sure that we could find somebody who wants to meet with you. And he said, sure. So he took a meeting for a £200 donation to his charity of choice, again, UK-based, but a children's charity that he chose. And he took that meeting and he maximized his trip here by finding an hour in order to raise money for charity. Similarly, to your point, if someone's flying over to the UK and has already spent all that money on hotels and airfare and everything else, and they want to make sure that their diaries are as full as possible, well, they can use Time to Give Network to try to slot in other meetings because, again, you're already spending a lot of money. Let's spend a few hundred more pounds and just get those right people in there. So it can be for people visiting, whether it's a time giver visiting, time bidder visiting, or even within the UK itself. But I thought it was interesting because that first transaction, which was our first transaction, was actually of two members of the ecosystem. It was not an asset manager. It was a fund administrator and a fintech that wanted to meet with each other. So it just goes to show that, you know, you don't want to be too presumptuous. And that's this open-endedness of the potential of it. And the fact that we only have to break even, right? That's the beautiful thing about it. We don't have to satisfy investors. All we need to do is break even. Anything else over and above breaking even, we're donating to charity, thankfully, and we're pretty sure we'll get there. But right now, it's a merry band of volunteers.
It's going to be literally my next question, but obviously it's your baby in every sense. So who else, apart from you, is there on the team knitting all this together?
It started with different people helping out along the way and contributing, and then either they ran out of runway or they got a job, which happened to a number of people. There's a woman named Laura Adams, who was our original CMO, and now she has a new job, but she helped to move the needle. There's a gentleman named Steve Engdahl, who was the product manager at Charles River and a number of other shops. He helped move this incredibly. The platform wouldn't have existed without him. But even before him, there was a gentleman named Justin Wotus, who was from Bloomberg, who helped with my original business requirement doc. So it's been all these people basically stepping in, helping to move this forward. And now we have a team. We have a new fractional CMO. We have a COO. We have a chairman. We have members of our stewardship and advisory board who make sure that we are all running this the way it should be running and sticking to our mission and nobody taking advantage or doing anything wrong. So we've been in, but the bulk of this team has been volunteers. We also have a team of ambassadors. Ambassadors are like brand ambassadors, basically, where they're out and they're spreading the word and helping to grow the community. Many of them are currently between jobs. And they're trying to find a new way to network. And they're trying to find a way to show that they're giving back. And they're trying to find a way to start a conversation. And it's not as easy to start a conversation by saying, hey, I'm out of a job. Can we have a chat? It's more interesting. And they feel better about the fact that they can lead with the fact that they're a volunteer for this not-for-profit venture. And we'd like to tell you more about how you can raise money for charity or how you can have a new CSR tool or how you can have a new business development tool, depending on who they want to talk to. And we're always looking to grow that universe of volunteers because that's just the spirit of what we're trying to do here, right? Just people giving back, getting stuck in. Everybody gets made whole in the end. Everybody's well served. Again, win, win, win. But thus far, the model has worked and it's still early days. So we're super excited about
that. Yeah, it's marketing. That's my term. Everyone's made whole. Everyone is made whole. But no, I think you're right. And it is all about giving. And if it can benefit those that are, as you say, are looking for opportunities. But we're out, you know, Melanie, who you know, and I, not as much as, you know, Mel, but, you know, we're going to be out at all the conferences and we will always be an unofficial brand ambassador for you just because why not? All of these audiences, in way, it's always be really looking either for work themselves or to pitch opportunities, you know, we will be happy to say something. You might consider this. You might consider this as a route to getting in front of people that you might want to influence.
And I think doing this as a not-for-profit has helped me in a way. Number one of the reasons why we did this, in addition to the legacy and all the other altruistic reasons, was I just thought it would be a lot easier to partner with the head of CSR of a firm if this is a not-for-profit and we're just looking to give them a tool and not necessarily get rich off of this. But we also have some conference organizers like Foxens and WBR and Owen James, to give a few of them a shout out, where they've allowed me to participate and share the word. Or Acuity is another one. They just had a hedge fund conference and they invited me to that and even say a few words. And that's invaluable to me, right? Again, with no budget, I can't necessarily pay for some of these expensive ones, but they feel like they're just trying to give back and it's the right audience. And it takes a village, I guess. And some people really do, you know, lean into this thing and are willing to, you know, do what they can to help us to raise awareness, because again, it's the community coming together to really do this. And conference organizers are a big part of the community. That's still an arrow in the quiver of every CMO. They're always going to do those. But maybe this is just another way to get those meetings for their salespeople in order to fill their pipeline, in order to grow their business, as just another way to do it.
As you say, it is literally another channel, but the plus is every event you go to, and same as us, will be at some of the WBR events this year and a whole bunch of others, A-Team events and so on. You know, we're all there fundamentally for the same reason, but this is, in your case, you can say, well, you know, we could talk about this philosophically, that actually, look, this is how it works. So from your perspective, you know, you'd be a very welcome time giver. This is all you have to do. And from your perspective, you know, you should consider this because you could be, you know, joining industry associations. You've got a subscription fee. The level of paying what is not a huge amount of money for anybody who's working in the city, right. It's value, but it's proven value. what's the worst that can happen if they have one conversation, modest £100 donation?
It feels like a riskless trade. I mean, for me, from a time giver perspective, again, it takes them 5 minutes to sign up and then an hour of their time in a meeting or even a half hour. We have some time givers who are just super busy and they're like, I'll take a half hour. I'm like, that's fine. We're happy to have anybody on the platform offering whatever they can. But yeah, being able to grow the network, being able to convince people that this is a good idea by letting them see others getting involved and being at a trade show, like I said, to be able to share all these stories, maybe even get a table with a screen. That would be my panacea. I can get people to sign up right on the fly.
That, I think, is the way to go. Or even actually just an app on your phone that people can literally, a QR code.
We make it as easy as possible for people to sign up. Like, we have explainer animations on the website just to make sure people know exactly what to do. I want to make this as frictionless as possible, both from a signing up perspective, setting up perspective. We have this, most people, when they set themselves up, they create a standing by it now offer, which basically is live for a year or until they agree to take a meeting. And then again, it goes away. They set the name of the charity. They set the donation amount, set it and forget it, and just put it out there as a thing. And then for the time bidders, again, we have these saved searches so that if somebody joins the platform, they're going to get alerted. They're pulled into the platform. They're then able to see who these people are. And if it's something that's of interest to them, they take it further. And if it's not, you know, but it is a riskless trade. It's £150 to a not-for-profit. And then it's up to that time bidder to determine if they want to make that donation. Nobody's forcing them to do it. They have to think, okay, this person, this amount, that makes sense. Let's do it. And if it doesn't make sense, they don't have to do it. So there should be no losers.
Just as a technical question, so if you have a particularly big name time giver, and they have this, as you say, buy it now offer that they've set up, the minute a bidder has said, I'd like to take advantage of this opportunity, are they then out of the market until that opportunity has taken place? Or could they potentially be contacted by 10 different people all saying, I want an hour of your time?
No. Well, if you put an offer up, for as long as that offer is live, people can send you indications of interest saying, hey, I'd like that meeting. Hey, I'd like that meeting. And then if they're getting a lot of interest, then they can pick just one. Or they could put up 20 offers and sell them all individually. Or if they're really in demand, then maybe an auction makes more sense because then you're maximizing the value of that hour. People are signing up. They're participating in an auction like Warren Buffett. And, you know, that very in-demand person is now able to maximize that hour. Once that trades, again, they can't be contacted by anybody because they don't have a live offer. And then at the appropriate time, they put a new live offer up and the process begins again. We also have the ability for time givers, if they want to turn off that indication of interest and they're just like, it's fine, I don't need to get involved. Whoever wants to meet with me, whoever's first, they can just make that donation and, you know, just to make it as super easy as possible.
No, as you said, give them every flexibility then. And again, I like that. It sort of brings us nicely around to exactly that exchange model so you can put your offer in.
And the nice thing also for the charities, worth noting, is that they're happy because now they have a new donor, right? So the value of a new donor to a charity is quite good. Someone who knows about that charity and maybe they'll get stuck in. And maybe, you know, the ideal from a CSR perspective is if a company allows their employees to participate and the employee participates, well, now maybe they do matching gifts. So maybe they either make a matching gift to that same charity, or maybe they say, you know what, for the matching gifts, we'll match gift to our corporate partner. So now our employees are participating. They're having a more impactful relationship with their corporate partners. The employees know that they're supporting the corporate partner as well as a charity that's near and dear to their heart. And that really is even better, right? That's almost the panacea where, you know, because most of these corporations do have this matching gift. And if they do, let's use it. And most companies have the ability to take time off to do volunteerism. This isn't even taking time.
Well, I was going to say, this makes it painless for literally everybody involved in the offer, right?
Yeah.
The bidder, the giver, the charity, the in-house CSR team.
Yeah.
The compliance officers, you know, that this is as painless as it can be. This has been honestly really fascinating, Andrew, and it was fascinating the first time around when we spoke. I'm delighted that you've done so well in what's less than a year of activity, so onwards and upwards. Is there anything we haven't touched on today that you'd like to tell our listeners?
No, just, you know, obviously we're always looking for volunteers, people to help, people with skills or people that have, you know, the desire to leverage this to grow their own network and do some networking and giving back and helping out. So we're always looking for people to help us because that's going to be an invaluable part of the model. And then it's just a matter of trying to find individuals who are keen to get started now. Those who are looking to raise money for charity, those who are seeking access and curious about this. And as mentioned, one of the other ways in which we've raised money is through sponsorship, right? So we have a number of firms that have made contributions to the Time to Give Network. We're looking to raise money from 40 firms, the founding 40, as we call them. And they've all contributed £5,000 to this not-for-profit entity in return for branding and LinkedIn love and just showing that they want to help to bring this forward. So we're always looking for new sponsors as well. We think that for that £5,000 contribution, if this goes to plan and this becomes this global, all singing, all dancing platform that takes a bite out of the expert network market and also allows other individuals who are seeking access for any number of other reasons, this thing should be huge. And to be associated with this in perpetuity is something that hopefully some firms will find attractive.
So I'm going to ask you, so you're founding 40, it's a one-off investment.
It's a £5,000 for 1 year sponsorship where your brand is on the website and we're supporting you in every way possible. But your brand will always be mentioned at events because that's another thing that we want to do as well. We know that this platform lends itself to events. Just because it's all about networking and it's all about charitable fundraising. So if we can have events that are also about networking and fundraising, well, that's a good way for us to continue to grow the organization and to grow the platform. And so at every event that we have worldwide, what I've told all our sponsors is that there will be a pull-up banner. And in perpetuity, the founding 40 names will be on that banner globally, and for $5,000, I think it's a pretty good deal. If you believe that we can pull this off, and if you can play a role in helping us to pull this off, that would be fantastic.
So obviously we're going to carry on talking, Andrew, to you and Time to Give Network. But for today, we're going to round it up here. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you again. We won't leave it so long next time. So thank you very much, Andrew Kaufman and the Time to Give Network.
Thank you, Tina. Appreciate the opportunity to share the story and look forward to seeing you in person sometime soon.